At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball. You're going to love this talk with my man Parker Jackson Cartwright. Of course, SoCal-born and bred basketball player who went on to play 4 years as a starting point guard at the University of Arizona. What's it like to make it overseas? I don't know if you guys know, but in Germany last year, he was the player of the year in the first division in Germany. And now he's back playing first division in France. We'll get all of his thoughts on what it was like at Arizona when the DeAndre Ayton got $100,000 news dropped right before they played Oregon. You guys remember that? I'm going to ask Parker about it. Great dude. Interesting story. How he regained his confidence and became really a star playing overseas. And he's very young. He's got a long career ahead of him. Before we get to that, the story of basketball right now revolves around Ime Udoka. And, like, look, I think some of how we covered it in the media was embarrassing, you know, like blaming everybody except for Ime Udoka, who accepted responsibility. And, yeah. But the interesting part is how it affects the Celtics. Everyone I know in that organization says Joe Mazzulla is a dude. He'll be great. He'll handle it great. I just can't stop thinking, why didn't they give it to Damon Stoudemire, who was a star in the league, has been a head coach, two things that Joe Mazzulla hasn't done. It's a little bit of a curious decision for me, because I thought Damon was ahead of him in the pecking order, but apparently he is not. And this is a hard one to walk into, because it feels a little bit like when Kyrie Irving came back after missing the playoffs because he had his knee, that, remember, the mesh was replaced or whatever was problematic. He had that infection in his knee with the Celtics, and they go to the Eastern Conference Finals. And the next year, they lose early. And, you know, Kyrie, you know, it's the we were better without you. What can Joe Mazzulla get over that we were better without you thing? Even if they weren't always great with Ime, they ended up in the NBA Finals. And so perception becomes reality. And the perception is that Ime turned it around. Ime is the reason that they were so good at the end of the year. I think it's a really hard job for Joe. Very, very difficult. And I also would, I'm not anybody who's critical of the Celtics. It's one of those situations there's no guidebook for, but all you can do is share as much as people are comfortable with, but you can't share too much and you can't share nothing at all, especially if you're going to make some sort of dramatic move like suspending your head coach for a year with no set plan for if he'll come back or if he won't come back. Most people think he won't come back, but I don't understand why you wouldn't just cut ties. There has to be something in terms of termination for cause and how they're going about it, why they haven't terminated him yet. Or maybe it's just they really like him and they'd like for him to coach, but right now it's not possible. You got to suspend him for a year and see what happens if the dust dies down. Because here's the other thing that people don't think about. If they don't do well and they don't want to retain Joe Mazzulla as their head coach and they wanted to move back to being an assistant coach, like, do we think that works? Bringing him back works? Because then, well, what happens with women in the organization, how somebody purports stuff, it doesn't actually matter. Again, I'm not saying I say this, but others will say winning is all that matters, and they brought him back to win. The big thing to keep in mind is the Nets should be better. The Hawks should be better. The Heat should be good. The Cavs should be better. Who else? The Sixers should be better. So the East, and I haven't, you know, there's other, I don't know about the Hornets and what they look like. There's obviously going to be other challengers out of the East that one would think have improved. I mean, look, the East has been, we haven't talked about Milwaukee. You know, Milwaukee should be very good. So you got all those teams, and yet the Celtics went to the NBA Finals. What happens this year? And instead of looking at it in a cylinder in linear fashion, hey, do they have better players or worse players? Or look who they've added. And I do, they've added a quality backup point guard, or maybe even quality starting point guard. I don't know if they're the better because of it, because the field is much more difficult. All right, more to come on the Celtics stuff, but let's dig in. Here's my talk with Parker Jackson Cartwright, who joined me from France.
I want to get to your incredible year you had last year, right? Which is the culmination of a lot, right?
Right.
But where did it all start? Like, you first started playing basketball. If you search your memory banks, where did you first hoop?
The start was 6 years old, you know, with John Fisher, Hoop Masters. You know, I was playing up with my brother because he's 3 years older than me. And, you know, John Fisher would always have me playing up with the older kids. So I kind of just got my start there. I got thrown into the fire early, you know. I was tested, I was challenged at a young age, and it all worked out for me, really.
So you're playing up at 6 years old. What level were you playing? Like 8U?
Yeah, I think I was playing 9 and under at that time. You know, I don't think I ever played my age. And as I got older, you know, when I was on John Fisher's, like, when I had my own team, you know, we were playing up in tournaments. So it was just like always that thing of being thrown into a competitive environment with kids that are supposed to be bigger and better than you. I think you learn a lot of lessons in that.
I would agree. But I mean, like, look, you're not big now. You weren't big growing up.
Right. Right.
I mean, so what was that like to always be the smallest dude?
You know, I never really felt like I always knew I was the smallest. I'm always have been the smallest player on the floor anywhere I've been, but I never felt like that. You know, I thought that, you know, if I just I always felt like I stood out in a way, playing smart basketball, playing within myself, you know, not trying to be too much or anybody else that I'm not supposed to be. And it just worked for me. I think, you know, you play with that chip on your shoulder, you feel like you belong, and it doesn't get to you that much. You just kind of do what you got to do. And it always worked for me.
So your first high school you went to was Loyola, right? Which right. is all boys school.
Yeah.
Why there?
Well, my brother went there. It's a very prestigious school in LA. I grew up really watching them. So I was like, you know, Loyola is the school. And I feel like my brother went there. I always looked up to him. He had so much success. And I kind of just followed suit. And, you know, I don't think coming out of middle school, I really wanted to go anywhere else. It was either Loyola or nothing. And, you know, my dad was raised Catholic. So Loyola is obviously a prestigious Catholic all-boys school. And it just made sense at the time. Everything kind of just checked out. And I felt like I could have that same similar success that my brother did, even more, just watching him.
You were, if I remember correctly, you're really highly touted, right? Everybody knew, like, you were a hooper. And then didn't you miss on the, it was your sophomore, your junior year with your foot or the stress fracture?
It was, that would have been my sophomore year. I missed all that time. Maybe like a few months during the season. Cause I started the season, we had that preseason tournament, and then I didn't play until like the end of league play. So yeah, I dealt with some foot injuries throughout my whole high school career. I mean, that was rough, but.
It's hard, right? When you're a hooper and this is all you've done, all of a sudden they're like, no, you can't hoop, but you can't run, right? You got to hold on.
You can't do you. I have foot problems, I have shin splints. I'm wearing a boot every other week. It felt like, you know, but it was just a part of that journey, you know?
When you went to Sierra Canyon, people hear Sierra Canyon now and they think, well, that's how it's always been. But it hasn't always been. Like, you were kind of, and tell me if I'm wrong, you were kind of that first wave of dudes to go to Sierra Canyon, weren't you?
Yeah. I mean, I started early pretty much. I was there in the fifth to eighth, you know, when Sierra was still Sierra Canyon, but not like it is now. And then obviously when it's time to come to high school, the high school wasn't like it, you know, all it's built up to be now with the gym and, you know, all the kids going there that you kind of know. But yeah, I feel like I'm part of that first group, that first wave that had a big part in building, you know, just that clout and so on and so forth.
Didn't you not even play there, right? Like,
I didn't play.
So wait, okay. So take me through how this all went down, right? You get done with your junior year and what happens?
I get done with my junior year at Loyola.
Right.
And then now it's my senior year. I go into my senior year. I'm there.
You play that summer with who?
I played that summer with Cal Spring.
Okay.
We had just come off. Who was on my team? Mm-hmm. Who was on that team? That team had Peyton Daystrip, Aaron Holiday, Zylan Cheatham. You know, we made a good run in Peach Jam. You know, it was a good team. In the previous year, the summer before that, I played with Marcus Lee, Torin Jones, Jordan Matthews, Nigel Williams-Goss. So I finished my junior summer, go to my senior year. I'm only there half semester. So I don't even remember how many games we played. But, you know, after that half semester, that first semester, that's when the season starts to get, you know, for real. You know, you're in league play. You're about to hit the playoffs. So I have that incident, the academic incident. And then...
What was the academic incident?
So there's a 3-strike rule at Loyola. And, you know, over the course of 4 years, you know, I had, you know, 2 strikes going into that the last time that I got penalized, which was for an art incident, plagiarism type of thing.
So what'd you do? I mean, like, dude, you're a professional basketball player. It's 8 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing it was like, it was a homework fraud. And it's a very prestigious school. So all it's right.
like serious, you know, you,
yeah, no, they're very, you, like, serious.
Didn't change,
yeah.
You read something, you didn't change the wording well enough. So they said
didn't change the wording. So it's like, so that's one. And then the second time was a plagiarism fraud. You know, not to say that was so much intentional, but, you know, you're writing a paper and you're going through, I forget that, where you send your paper in and it kind of checks. I forget that program, but obviously you're not getting past that system. So that was my second ding. And then the third time was it was art class. And I didn't do the assignment, but I just took somebody else's assignment, turned it into mine. So that's the third time. And I got pulled out of class. I remember that day.
So tell me about this day. Okay, so... And so people understand you're being recruited by UCLA and Arizona. Had you committed to Arizona at that point?
I had committed to Arizona my junior year.
Okay, so you're committed to Arizona. You're going to Arizona.
Yeah.
To play for Sean Miller.
Right.
And all of a sudden they come into what class to get you?
They come into my art class. I mean, I'm in the class, you know, and you know the tone of a dean, you know, and it's not good. And I kind of just felt that energy. I knew it wasn't good, but I didn't know, not thinking, oh, what did I do? What am I in trouble for? So you get to the office, you get to the dean's office. He tells you what's going on. Now you know what you're up against because this is the third time and I don't know what's going to happen. So obviously they call my parents. My parents are upset. You know, it's just a very crazy thing now. Cause now what, you know, I'm supposed to go to practice after school. And like, I think now we're our last stretch of league and then the playoffs, which we're going to be in. Cause we got Thomas Wells, Max Hazard, myself, we had a good team. And I just remember all of it happening so fast. Like, okay, now I can't finish at the school. I have to take classes at a community college if I want to get my diploma. And then obviously I was, you know, well liked at Loyola. I had a lot of friends. I was, you know, everyone knew the situation. So they didn't, they weren't going to let me finish school there, but they said I could get my diploma if I go to a community college and finish classes. So I just chose, I didn't feel like that was the best option for me. So, you know, Sierra Canyon, I got a lot of love for Sierra. You know, they opened their arms and they let me back and they brought me back. They already, you know, they reached out to my dad to bring me back. And that was, you know, that was very great.
When did you talk to Coach Miller?
Within that time frame, I think within those days where I was trying to figure out what I was going to do, because I had a hearing at Loyola, you know, just to see if I could stay in school in front of the board. So we talked. If it happened, I think it happened. The situation happened Friday, and I had a hearing maybe the next day. So we talked.
What did he say?
Sean was fine. I mean, obviously, you know, there's some disappointment. But he held my hand through that situation, and he was very strong, and you know, he didn't waver. He didn't waver, man. He kind of stuck with me, and just that support. I knew if I didn't know before if it was a good decision, I knew after that, and the way he handled it was great.
Can I give you mine? What happened to me my senior year? You'll love this.
Yeah.
So I had to take typing class. I'd already committed to Notre Dame.
Right.
And Notre Dame, incredibly prestigious academic institution. Mm-hmm. So I had to take a typing class. I know how to type. And what you have to understand is that the difference in our age is, you know, this is before the internet. And you used to have to, type all your papers. Even if you had a computer, it was more for word processing than anything.
Right.
So I'm going to say like the third week of typing class, and it's dreadful. The teacher is not particularly engaging, and she doesn't like athletes, and it's a bunch of us athletes who were just trying to get this done right. So you show up to class and she's already pregnant, and like 3 weeks in she goes on maternity leave and she's gonna be gone for the semester, and like the assistant or head soccer coach is like your teacher. We're like, up top, this is awesome. So I had another teammate named Sammy Grease, and Sammy already knew how to type. And basically the teacher would take his order, whatever he'd want to eat. And then we'd all pool in money and we use typing class to go get food. And we'd play like Oregon Trails or some kind of computer game.
Okay.
So we're like, this is the easiest thing ever. We'll all get A's. He's happy. 2 weeks to go in semester. She comes back. Early return from maternity. Oh. And we're like, oh, shit. So I come up with an idea that to take the final typing exam, all you have to do is show her your words per minute. And then at some point during the day, she has to come behind you and watch you use your fingers correct. But right. It doesn't have to be at the same time. Too many kids, she can't sit there while you do the test and watch you type. Right?
Right.
So she goes up and she says like 52 words a minute. All right, good. That's an A. And then she goes around and she's going to watch you type. So what we do is somebody else does my test. My buddy, Rafael Alizarian, does my test because he knows how to type. And then he's actually seated next to me and we switch the keyboard. Instead of it plugging into my screen, it plugs into his and his plugs into mine. So while she's watching me type, you're taking this thing where, you know, it, like you get hit the right letters. And he's looking over my shoulder. He's typing right here and making sure we get all the right letters. So it all marries up. So I'm using the fingers and doing it. And he's actually doing the typing. And she has no idea. Meanwhile, his computer's going, beep, 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 beep. But she's not paying attention to that, right? Oh. So we're like, straight. Everybody's getting it. We're good. And then somebody narked on us. And I remember that walk, like you go into the vice principal's office and you're like, oh shit, like this is bad.
Bad.
This is not good. Like, and it was before my senior year. And okay. You know, like I just signed a scholarship, like this shit is bad. So I got a C in typing. They made me retake everything and I ended up getting a C in typing. I was fortunate I was at a public school that I didn't have to go anywhere else. So that's my story.
Yeah, I feel like it happens, man.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So, listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You show up at Arizona, and what was it like?
Arizona, you know, I didn't visit any other school for, you know, pretty much on visit, so I knew what I was going into. I knew the school. I knew, you know, how I was going to fit in. And when I get there, it's like, okay, you know, this is different. Because I went, you know, you go to all boys school. And although I went to a co-ed school my last semester, it's like, okay, now it's on a bigger scale, you know, college. And, you know, now you're on a team with guys like TJ McConnell and Stanley Johnson. So the team is really good. You know, and this is just a whole new experience. You're away from your parents. And I'm like, wow, this is like a dream almost. You know, Arizona. And that year was really surreal, man. I mean, people were unlucky to make the tournament, you know, in 4 years. You know, I got to go and almost make the Final Four that year. So, and I made the tournament every year I was there. So, I mean, Arizona was, I thought, the best fit for me. Logistically, being a student and a basketball player at the time, because, you know, my parents could come to all my games, which they were. My dad was at every game, which was very important to me. And, I mean, they say college are the best years of your life. And granted, they were. I mean, I had a lot of fun. But I just think the experience kind of grew on me as I got older. And, you know, it was just, it was an unreal experience.
What do you remember? What was it like to go against TJ McConnell on a daily basis?
That guy just, his motor is incredible. I mean, he stays at a level and he'll just, you know, you talk about not being the most like skilled player, but he has skill, and then he has this like undeniable like grit in him. And it's like, that guy, he made me better because he was just not going to give me anything, you know, like he was cool.
Imagine, like, so like, you know, when you get to college and you play Cal Supreme, play Loyola, played at the highest level of AAU with Peach Jam and basketball that you could possibly play. And so everybody thinks like, I'm used to going up against dudes. I'm used to playing hard. And then you get there and here's a grown ass man who plays way harder than you ever thought possible. Oh. Right.
I mean, he was a fifth year, or maybe he was a sixth. Fifth. And I mean, every day was a dogfight. I mean, you're trying to guard him. He's super smart. And he's got one of the best like mid-range pull-ups I think I've ever been around. Defensively, he's gonna pick you up full court. Like, I mean, just going to get some in practice. And then, you know, at the time I was playing only like 10 to 12 minutes. So I get to watch him in the game. And I mean, he's not afraid of anything, anybody. So, I mean, that team was really special. It had Rondé Hollis Jefferson on it, who was crazy. That guy would just, she's like TJ, but 6'8", you know, long arms, defensive, like craze. So, I mean, learning from those guys and seeing in a year before, seeing what they almost did, jumping into that, it was like I really had to step up a level and mature really quickly.
Why couldn't you guys get over that hump?
That's a good question. I just say it's a combination of, you know, you need a little luck on your side. You know, we're in the Elite Eight. We're playing Wisconsin. We're up the whole game. You know, we're going in halftime. And you know, like, the trajectory of a game and, like, how it's going to go based on how you're playing and how they are. We feel like we had them figured out. They were a good team. They had Kaminsky and they had Decker. Obviously, they were experienced, but we felt like we were better. That's a game we're supposed to get, we feel like. And, you know, you miss some shots, they get hot. And the ball bounces their way, and then that's how it happens. I think Sean Miller is one of the best minds in college basketball. But, you know, I just think sometimes, like I said, you need things to go your way, and, you know, it just didn't go our way.
The next year, TJ's gone. And you start some, come out the bench some. What was that experience like?
Well, now your team is different. You know, you still have guys from the previous year. And, you know, I felt like I was supposed to take the jump that I felt like I was supposed to, you know, being the player that I was, like, in high school, like, you know, that everybody knew. And obviously the ball was more in my hands. You know, we had Kadeem Allen, but I was more of a different type of player than him. So I thought, you know, this was going to be like a year for myself to really breakout. Everyone has that breakout year in college basketball. But I never really found my footing. I had some good games and I had some glimpses of like, okay, you know, I can be a good lead guard in college basketball on Arizona's team. But I just never quite broke through. Not saying I didn't have a good season, but, you know, I felt like for myself, it wasn't what I thought I expected or what others expected. You know, never really broke through. I had games, I had glimpses, but never really got over the hump. As a team, we never really got over as a hump. And then you get to the tournament and then you're bounced and I think you lost in the first round.
Yeah.
That was the story of our season.
Okay, so I won't name names, mm-hmm. but your junior year, there was a player that kind of tripped out, right? That the story I was told was he like came into the practice one day without his shoes and they're like, bro, your shoes are in your locker. And he was just completely out of it. Like there have been some dudes that had some weird stuff go on that in those next couple years.
Yeah. Fair.
What's that like?
Yeah.
Go ahead. I won't say another word. What?
You know, it's that thing of like, you never realize what's happening around you until you're in it. And so many things happen in those last really 3 years, you know, starting from my sophomore year to the end. It was
all right. So sophomore year, that gave me one thing happened sophomore.
Well, you have the story with Elliot Pitts.
So for people who don't remember,
what's
the story?
Well, I don't know the details of the story. You know, it's a misconduct situation. You know, I don't know the details. I never, you know, kind of just stood. He was really one of my good friends.
Right.
One of the best teammates I've ever had.
Right. So something like that goes down and like now you're on the opposite side of it. Like when high school, it involves you and you know what it feels like, but it's academics. Now, you know, like.
Right. So now, you know, you're a player on a team, you know, and it's like it's after a big win and then things happen. And then now your season's like, now your season's changing and everything around you is changing. So, you know, you deal with that your sophomore year and then obviously junior year. Alonzo Trier is going through his deal with the NCAA. And it's just like, you know, we can't catch a break. Arizona can't catch a break. Our players can't catch a break. So it was always something. But I think, you know, we did a good job of kind of keeping it together in some way. You know, the guys that were going through their things, they kept it together. And I think that's kind of just a reflection of them and the program.
Arizona's a party school. It's a basketball school, but also a party school.
Right.
Right. How'd you manage that?
How did I manage it? I mean, I have fun. I definitely have fun. You know, you're not gonna get around it, meaning like you're in it. So you have to find a balance. I thought I did a good job at finding a balance. You know, I've never been a huge party kind of guy. Obviously, you know, it was different. You go to college, you're gonna party, like you're on your own, you're gonna make some questionable decisions. Like that's just what it is. And I definitely went out and enjoyed the perks of being a college athlete on great teams. I think I would give myself a pat on the back for managing it the best way. And having a great support system. I didn't go outside of myself and do things that I knew would hurt myself or my team or my family's name or any of that.
Your senior year is the year where you got a chance, right? You got DeAndre Ayton.
Right.
You're starting point guard, you know, right. You've been there 4 years. Where were you when the Andre story came out? You remember exactly where you were?
Yeah, I was with my girlfriend at the time. I was at her apartment, and I'm just reading it on the phone. Like, Twitter, it comes across Twitter, and I'm like, whoa, you know, that's, it's just, like I said, it happens so fast. You get it from Twitter, then now you're hearing it from school.
Okay, but so take me through what that's actually like to be part of. It comes out on Twitter that he was getting $100,000, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So it comes out. This is not.
It was on social media. That I don't. Maybe it wasn't Twitter, but it was social for sure.
Definitely social media. And then it was an ESPN story, right? And that was correct. All anybody talked about.
Right.
You're at your girlfriend's apartment. Mm-hmm. You guys. Is there a group text? Does somebody call you? Like, what are you guys doing when all?
Yeah,
this
I mean, happens? It's a group text within our team. And then it's that long, daunting wait of, okay, coach is going to send out a message and then officials send out a message. So it's like now we have to play kind of damage control in a way.
Yep.
So the news comes out and then, you know, obviously you have a meeting. And at that time, it's like, okay, so we're still in our season. So we have to...
You guys played at Oregon, I think, that day. The next game was like at Oregon.
Yeah. So we're on the road. We're supposed to go on the road and we played a game. And it was a great game. We should have won the game, you know. And that was another situation of like, okay, we know we're dealing with this, but we still have to play basketball. And I thought we handled, for all intents and purposes, what anybody else thought on the outside, I thought we held it together the best we could. We had Lorenzo Romar, who was on the staff. You know, he was a great voice. And stuff happens. And you have to prepare for those things when they do.
Did you get any money? Did you guys start asking? Like, yeah, I have to ask you. Like, what'd you get?
I mean, not within the team, but it's like now outside chatters coming in. And you're like, oh, you know. What did you get? Did you get anything? Did you get a car? Did your parents, did your mom get a car? You know, everyone is saying something, you know, because it's a trickling effect. You know, now it's not just DeAndre Ayton, it's everybody involved. So.
What was it like for DeAndre? I mean, he's just a freshman, obviously a really well-respected player. He's, you know, he was having a good year. What was that like? What was, as his point guard, what was it like?
I mean, I tried to just help him through it as best as I could. You know, seeing him go through it, I think at the time he was a freshman and he wasn't as mature as is now. But saying that is a compliment because he handled it. Like, he never really showed, you know, like he was really stressed or, you know, he kind of just kept it together. He's a very, like, lively dude. He's not a down kind of guy, mope around, getting your feelings. So he handled it well. And I think because he handled it so well, we were allowed to just move forward, you know. And in an Oregon game, he played really well. I thought that was one of his best games that I've seen in life. You know, jumper, dunks, you know, anything, everything you see now. So I think because he handled it well, and in the way he, you know, gave us the confidence that we can handle it well, I think it was okay.
What's amazing about it is, so, you know, you guys lose that game in overtime, 98-93. You come back. Huh?
It was double, I think.
Double overtime. Yeah, double overtime. And that was your second straight. You played Oregon State in overtime, and you played Oregon in overtime, both on that same trip, right?
Right.
And then you come back, you beat Stanford, you beat Cal,
mm-hmm.
you win the Pac-12 tournament. So there's a lot of people that look and they see the loss to Buffalo and like, well, they lost to Buffalo because of the DeAndre Ayton deal and it was a distraction, but like, well, it was such a distraction. How'd you win the Pac-12 tournament?
Right.
What happened against Buffalo?
We weren't, I'm not going to say we weren't prepared because that's not the deal. We didn't match their toughness. I mean, those guys, I don't know if you've seen the TBT, but like they've got that same team, you know, Wes Clark, CJ Massenburg. And I think they played a different style than us. And obviously we started 2 7-footers, you know, DeAndre.
Right. They played small. You played big.
Right. So they played small and they're playing like five out. Even their center wasn't making threes. And it's hard when you bring, okay, you have lightning quick guards like they did, and then three bigs who are like dribbling, putting the ball on the floor. But I think more so they out-toughed us. You know, we didn't match anything that they had for us. And obviously it's the NCAA tournament. It's one shot. Like if you don't match, then you're going to lose. It doesn't matter who you play. It doesn't matter who you are. You gotta come out and really play. And we didn't.
What was the locker room like? Because, you know, we always focus on the team that pulls off the upset.
Mm-hmm.
But for you, 4 years of the program, and you guys had just, again, you weren't playing poorly. You just won the Pac-12 tournament.
Right? Yeah.
You just won the Pac-12 tournament. And now all of a sudden you talk about it being fast. Like, oh, it's over. That's it. You will not put on an Arizona uniform again. What was that locker room like?
It was tough. It was really tough. You know, even being on the bench those last seconds, watching the time tick down, it's like, man, this went by really fast. And then, like, everything comes into reality. And, you know, that was a really good team. So that locker room was just kind of – it was – we obviously had that moment of, like, okay, man, this sucks. But, you know, after that, you know, we came together. But it was tough. You know, you have guys that are done and, you know, are leaving. And after such a long season with all the things that we've been through, it's like, man. But we didn't make excuses. We rallied around each other and we walked out of there with our heads high.
So what was your next summer and your decision like to play in the – I think you played G League right away, or what was that next summer and season like?
Well, I don't think a lot of people know, but so after that game, maybe like a week later, I had a leg pain towards the end of the season, even before the Pac-12 tournament. I'm like, my leg, I don't know what's going on. Like, I can't really jump off of just like one leg. But it wasn't like, in my mind, serious enough to where I'm going to shut it down. So after the season, I go get an x-ray and I have a tibial stress fracture that I have been playing with for maybe, could have been weeks, could have been months. I don't know. So that's a significant injury. I mean, tibial stress fracture. Without surgery, it's a 15-month healing process. Shorter, maybe more or less, depending on, you know, how it heals. But so I opted not to get surgery after that x-ray. I was just going to let it heal. And, you know, I had seen doctors in L.A. like, okay, I'm getting mixed information. Like, you should definitely get surgery or it might not heal. It might not heal. You might not be able to play if you don't get the surgery. And it's like, okay, the surgery, you have to stick a rod through your leg, your knee, and, you know, get that metal rod. And I was just kind of didn't want to do that. So I just opted to let it heal. But I ended up going to training camp with Toronto, not particularly knowing that I had the injury, but I thought that, okay, if I just rehab, and because I didn't want to miss that much time, you know, and I felt like in my mind, I was putting this unwarranted pressure on myself to just, okay, you know, this is my life. This is what I have to do. So I was just going to stick with it. And I went to Toronto and they took an x-ray, like a, you know, a normal check. And they're like, you can't play. You have a broken leg. We're not going to let you. We're not going to put you out in training camp. So I got cut. And then came back, rehab for a few months until February. Then I went to New York G League. And I was there about a month. And then that didn't work out. And then the following year.
What was that like? Here's the thing with New York and the G League is you played at the very highest level in college. And in Arizona, there's never an empty seat in the McHale Center. And I've always thought, and for me personally, it was minor leagues was really hard just because, man, I'm used to playing in front of people that care. And now you're on a team where nobody cares. They just want to get to the league, right? That was really hard for me. What was the experience like for you in playing in the G?
It was unlike anything I've experienced. Just like you said, not that guys don't particularly care. It's just like, you know, there's so much involved. Like, this guy's going to play, and he's got to play this amount of minutes, or, you know, he's earned his stripes. He's been on this team for this long. Like, he's going to play. And I was playing with some good players. Like, Billy Garrett was there, who was a star on that team at the time. So, coming in, I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't expect to come in and not play.
Right.
But, you know, it was an experience for me.
How'd you end up in England?
Well, that summer they called my agent and they were just like, okay, you know, we know he hasn't played, you know, he's coming off an injury, but we feel like this could be a good start for him. And just talking to my family and my brother, he was like, yeah, this could be a good start. You got to start somewhere. And for people that don't know, like, Europe is different. Like, you have to start somewhere unless you're a guy that's highly touted, had a great college career. You know, you're not just going to start at the highest level.
Right. You got to build a reputation for yourself, right?
Yeah, you have to build. And I didn't know anything about English basketball, but it was great from day one. I mean, it was, you know, nothing, it couldn't have went better. I'm in a new country, but they're speaking English. So the off court is fine. And the basketball was right up my alley. It let me be myself. And in turn, it started something great for myself in Europe.
Coolest thing about living in England?
I would say London, maybe.
What about it?
But get going to London, just being in a big city, and that's what I'm used to. I mean, you can get lost there. I was in a good city, Cheshire. Shout out Cheshire. Cheshire's a great town. But, you know, it was small, sort of like what I'm used to in Tucson, like small, you know, great fan base, like, you know, great food. I don't know if you've heard of Nando's before, the big food chain in England.
What do they make?
It's like, is it like Mediterranean? It's like chicken, exotic food, I would say. Halloumi, cheese. It's good.
So then the next year you go to France.
Right. Okay.
France is athletic. They get up and down, good style of ball.
Right.
What was it like to play there?
That was tough. I think in my whole career, that was probably the toughest adjustment I've ever had to make. Because the Pro B France is, the league is very physical. And it's a slower pace. Very in turn, like some ways methodical. So I had to really learn how to like slow down, you know, change speeds and think a little bit more whilst playing through the physicality, you know, because Pro A is more physical, which I'm in now. I mean, it's more athletic. Sorry.
Yep.
So those first few months, I had to figure it out. I mean, I didn't think that it was going to work. Honestly, you know, the style, just everything. Because, you know, now I'm going from England, English-speaking country. I'm right in my element. Now I'm going to France. I don't speak French. You know, coach is really on my ass in a good way, but he's on my ass. And I'm trying to figure it. I'm just trying to figure it out. So the first few months were really tough. But then right after December, I really hit a stride. It was just like something clicked.
What was COVID like?
I think
like
I started there? Starting.
What was COVID like there?
Our season stopped for a month. And we were on curfew the whole year. 6 p.m., 7 p.m. So on everything with that, on top of that, it's just like, man, mild depression, you know, really trying to watch my mental. Because like now I'm in the house. I got to be in the house at a certain time. It's cold. So it was a lot. But I think that year really helped me for everything that I have to deal with now.
Tell me about Germany. So last year was Germany, right?
Yeah.
And you were the player of the year in the league, which is unbelievable. It's a very good league. Right. Very good Americans. They love Americans. They love American guards. Where were you?
I was in Bonn, Germany. Great city. One of my favorite cities that I've been in. I enjoyed it. I can't say too much about it. It's just, it was a perfect match. It was close to Cologne, which is another great city. So I think I got to be my full self there as a player and a person. And the coach really unlocked all of my abilities, you know, just letting me be myself. Like, I felt like this is okay. This is how
Did you know that going in, or did it take a while? You're like, oh, this really is a good fit.
Yeah, I thought the adjustment was more to the practices, you know, because our practices are very intense, very quick, but like intense, like high, you know, high.
A lot of 5-on-5?
A lot of 5-on-5, you know, like just up and down, you know, a lot of competitive drills. But he put the ball in my hands from day one, and he trusted me to make decisions for myself and the team. And he never, you know, he let me play through mistakes, which was a good thing early. And I just kind of was like, okay, now that I have that trust, I can just like not think. And that season was probably one of the best seasons I've had to date.
Bonn is on a river, right? And it's a big city, over 300,000 people in it. You mentioned it's near Cologne. It's like a
Bonn,
almost what's the best thing to eat in Bonn?
Best thing to eat in Bonn? Well, I like Italian. I forget the Italian place. I was always there. It was an Italian restaurant, and I was there a lot. And it was like in the city, you know, a little fancy Italian. I would say that's the best, because pasta pizza is like, that's what I love. So I would say that's a good spot. I would recommend it if I had the name.
Now, they speak English there, or they was it all German?
There's some English speakers. You can find English speakers everywhere, but there's a lot of, I met a few Americans in Bonn.
Yeah.
Like living or going to school. So that was pretty interesting. And most of the Germans speak English. So, you know, it wasn't a big adjustment in that area. And when your teammates speak English, you're just around them 95% of the time. It's never that difficult.
What was it like to be recognized as a player of the year in the league? Considering all these different things you've been through, right? Didn't start as much as you wanted Arizona.
Right.
You had the stress fracture in your leg after college. You started in England, right? You go to Germany in your third year as a pro, you're player of the year in the league. What's that feel like?
I mean, I think sometimes I'm so hard on myself, I forget to like, okay, you know, I had to earn that. You know, I had to earn coming back from injury and sitting out all that time and taking my knocks, getting cut. So it was really emotional. And you know, I had to really calm myself down, but you know, it was an unreal feeling, you know, holding the MVP trophy up. You know, you know you're a good enough player to win that type of award, and I knew I was having a good year. But to get that award, you know, that's a one of one, man. It's MVP, like no one else has it. So it's like it's a speechless thing.
With your personal work, okay, you see all kinds of videos of guys and getting in their bag or what, but you're a pro now, right? So your workouts consist of what?
I think workouts consist of like being sharp, not being like in the gym for hours, but like locking in and keying in on things that you need to sharpen. And my brother works me out in summers, so it's like form shooting, miking drills. It's like mid range, you know, balance and pull up and deep range from three. It's like those things that you know are going to be important, especially as a small guard. You know, I have to be able to get my shot off. I have to be able to score in tight spaces and think quickly. So it's those things that help me in the summers that are very important throughout the season.
You mentioned how well you fit with Germany with your coach, mm-hmm. but then you leave and you go to Asphalt. Right now, that's where you are, Pro A in France.
Mm-hmm.
Was it just too much money?
I mean, I think it's just another opportunity, like a great opportunity. I'm talking to my coach from Bonn, he was like, you know, because things happen fast. You know if you're going to stay or what's going to happen next. And Asvel, you know, they come and they call, and it's like, it's Asvel, man. This is an unreal opportunity, you know. So you have to, it's like you got to weigh the options, but then you have to be like, okay, you know, here you have this opportunity. It's not so much always about the money. Yeah, the money is great, but now you can set yourself up and keep moving up. And, you know, this opportunity was just the best thing for me in my career and the step that I needed to take.
If you could say, huh?
It wasn't easy though. You know, because Bonn's a great club, it's a great team, it's a great city. So
in 10 years, where will you be?
Well, it's funny because if you ask me that when I first started, where would I be in 5 years? I always said the highest level of Europe, you know, European basketball. You know, now that I'm here, it's like, okay, I just want to get to the highest level, period, whichever that means for me. You know, maybe I just keep riding this in Europe and have a great career, which I would be totally fine with, you know. Or you just never know. I'm only 27. I feel like if I continue to grow and develop, who knows, maybe I can play in the NBA. I know I have the talent. I know I have the tools. So I'm never counting myself out in any regard. I take everything as it comes, and then I just do what I do, and then, you know, I get the recognition from whoever I feel like I need to get it from, but I don't have to prove anything to myself. I already know who I am.
You can be more connected obviously with your family because of the internet. Here we are, you're in France, I'm in California, we're talking via Zoom, like you can do that stuff, but it's still not home.
Mm.
What's the thing you miss the most when you're overseas?
Mom's cooking. I mean, you know, it's those little things like being around your family, you know, because it's 10 months. Like, so it's not an easy thing by any means. And my family's very connected. We're very close. So, you know, leaving is always hard. And then this is my fourth year, you know, it never gets easier. But I feel like I've had that experience now where, okay, I know that I can deal with it and things will be okay. And they come visit. So it's not like life or death or anything. But I definitely miss being at home, you know, being around my family, because it's different being around them than seeing them through a camera. But, you know, I'm lucky we do have technology and that they can come visit, you know, because that really helps, you know, throughout a long 10 months, 11 months, whatever it is.
If you were going to give advice to hoopers, because, like, this is really hard, like, what you're experiencing, people don't really understand. They're like, well, you're going somewhere in a different country, you're making money, there's some cool parts to it. How do you focus on the positives? How do you continue to push forward? You know, you also, like, here's another thing. You're in a foreign country when they don't speak your language. If you're not playing good, they're all talking about you, but you can't understand them because they're talking a different language, and they'll do it right in front of you too.
Yeah.
How do you, for sure. Like, what would the advice be to a hooper to get through the tough times of playing overseas?
I would just say stay the course. I mean, God knows I've been, there's always a tough period in your career every season when you're overseas. Like, it could be an adjustment at the beginning when you first get there. It could be in the middle of the season around Christmas. But, like, it gets better, you know, and you have to think that way. You have to step outside of yourself. You're going to be in uncomfortable positions. But the uncomfortable zone is a great place because you learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about what you can deal with, what you can take. And it's going to be uncomfortable. Like, off the rip, you're in a non-English speaking country. So you just have to be nice to yourself and not be so hard on yourself. You know, I had to learn that, like, man, why am I not figuring this out so quickly? Why am I, you know what I mean? But it's like, do what works for you and don't be afraid to get help from people, you know, because there are people that have been in my position before. And I think now more Americans overseas are starting to form this, like, bond, like, union almost within ourselves, just like talking about our experiences and trying to make our lives easier for each other.
Who have you gotten close with that you didn't know before this experience?
Like hoopers?
Yeah.
Overseas?
Yeah.
Well, I feel like I know a lot of people I would say, like, guys like Kyle Falk, who's been overseas for a long time. He's in China now.
Yeah. Huge, made huge money.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Way better post-college career than college career.
Yeah.
He's kept getting better and he's traveled all over the place.
So I have, like, some OGs that are, like, overseas, you know, that have been through everything. And you think, like, no one's been through what you have, but they have. And so it's like, you know, you talk to guys, you play a guy on a team, you know, he's American. And it's like, you guys just follow each other on Instagram. And it's like, yo, like, and you just start talking and chatting about your experiences with your team and your city. And then you just be like, man, this is the same situation, basically verbatim. So you're never alone. I think that's some other advice that I could give to players that maybe are thinking about playing in Europe, is like, you have to branch out. You know, you can't just stay. I've always been a quiet kind of guy, but, like, right. I think Europe has, like, really pushed me to step outside of myself, you know, broaden my horizons, try different things, see different things, get outside the house. Like, those are all important things.
Well, here's what I want to do. I want to check back in with you in a couple months when you guys get up and plan.
Yeah. And
see what it's like. See what this experience is like as opposed to Bonn, as opposed to France before in Pro B, as opposed to England. Is that cool?
That sounds good, man. Sounds good.
All right. We'll make sure we pump this out. Your family will see it and hear it. It's awesome. And congrats on an amazing year last year. And hopefully you can replicate it this year.
Thanks, man. Talk soon.
All right, Park. Thanks, bud.
My thanks to Parker Jackson Cartwright. Man, that was great. Really interesting stuff. Hope you enjoyed it. Remember, the Doug Gottlieb Show is daily, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, 12 to 2 Pacific. And then we have a special daily podcast only you know, if you download that sucker, that'll end up, that's kind of all you need for your day. If you can't catch the radio show, it's 1 hour. It's quick. It's hard hitting with all the different news stuff and usually an interview as well and some fun stuff. That's the Doug Gottlieb Show. And of course you got All Ball. So thanks for downloading. Remember to subscribe, rate and review. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.
Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.